Thanks for joining the BCMA for this podcast. We are celebrating BC Museums Week across the province, May 17th to May 24th. This year's theme is Museum Action, and each day we'll explore actionable items and inspiring discussions to help you take action and make change. Today, on International Museums Day, we're talking about reconciliation and repatriation. The podcast guest today is Chief Petra Monroe from the Mayu Kio Society. Thank you so much for joining me, Chief Monroe.
Hi, I'm Petra Monroe. I'm from Mayu Kio. I live in Prince George, and I inherited this role from my mom.
Can you describe the Mayu Kio Society? What does the society do, and what role does it play for your family?
Mayu Kio Society is an extended family who, in accordance with our law, Kio, or territory on the north end of Sabangan in central BC. The family has a responsibility to care for the land so the land can sustain and support the family forever. It's part of our natural law. For instance, if certain plants, fish, or animals, or the habitat that supports those plants and animals is endangered or threatened, we would move harvest to another part of the Kio. And if we abuse a natural law, there are transgressions. The transgressions in our oral history and legends. The Kio has supported our family for many generations. Without the plants and fish and animals, we would not be here.
The Mayu Kio Society is a 2020 repatriation grant recipient. Can you tell us about the item that is the subject of your repatriation?
We applied for the grant to bring our family's headdress back home. The headdress is important. We are so happy we found it. It's made from my ancestors' hair, who owned and lived on the Mayu Kio 200 years ago. It was reported to be used in ceremonies and dancing.
As stated in your application to the grant program, this item is the only tangible reminder of Indigenous government in your region and is a physical connection to your ancestors. Can you explain the impact of having this item repatriated to your community?
The headdress is significant on many levels. The first significant is the role of Kio-Wachan, a family Kio territory. Each Kio has a Kio holder or Kio-Wachan hereditary chief. In the mid-18th century, the title of Kio-Wachan for the Mayu Kio was held by Georgia Hull. The second significant is most Indigenous artifacts from 200 years ago don't have a person's name attached to them and often have an identifiable origin. But our headdress is named as having our great-grandfather's name, Georgia Hull, attached to it. The third significance is before my mother, Sally Sam, Ahul, died, she named me the great one and the only real Ahul. There is a direct link between George Ahul's connection to the Mayu Kio and mine.
How long has the community known that the headdress was at the Royal Ontario Museum, and how did you learn that it was there?
We came across the headdress because we were doing extensive research preparing for a title case. We started working on our history because since the 70s, the provincial government has been authorizing logging companies to remove vast amount of forest from our KO. Forest which has been sustained plants and animals that supported us and our ancestors after the generation. Despite many failed attempts to negotiate with the province and forest companies to protect the forest, we felt we had no choice but to defend our rights and launch an Aboriginal title case. We started research on our family territory in 1998. All types of research, it never ends. You have to remember that in order to defend our KO territory, you have to prove that you have a case for our Aboriginal title. After all, the government of BC and Canada will go to very extreme lengths to defend their colonial title and to discredit our Aboriginal title. It's strange that we have lived on our KO for many generations, hundreds and thousands of years, and yet the government of Canada bases its ownership of the same land on a doctrine of discovery from some other place. In 2016, we found references to our headdress with some literature published in the late 1800s by the Ministry of Education in Ontario. The reference in our headdress was buried amongst thousands of artifacts. At first, we didn't know that our headdress was part of the ROMS collection, but we knew it had been in Ontario, so we made a few calls to other museums in Ontario. It was then that we learned it was likely at the ROM. We called the ROM and told them about the headdress, and they told us that it was there and was just recently put on display.
Your family made a visit to the ROM in 2017, at which point the headdress had been in possession of the ROM for more than 100 years. Can you speak about what it was like to see the headdress in person and the experience of being at the museum?
Visiting the headdress was one of those keystone moments. It was important to our family, so we asked family members who wanted to make the trip from central BC to Toronto. Soon, seven of us used our air miles and scrounged together our savings and took time off school and work to travel across Canada to go to the ROM to see our headdress firsthand. We didn't know if they got the headdress from George Ahul or his son Jimmy Ahul or the details of the transaction. It didn't matter. The important thing was that it was there and we found it. When we arrived at the ROM, it was a nice sunny morning during business hours, and we made arrangements to meet the curator at the staff entrance. We made our introduction to the curator and he introduced us to some expecting museum security and registration staff. The ROM staff were all very pleased to meet us, and our sense was everyone expected us. The curator for the headdress toured us around the museum for about half an hour or an hour. The curator said he worked at the ROM for more than 40 years and was pleased to show us around. We were anxious. He knew we wanted to see the headdress. Then we made our way to the wing where the headdress was located. He introduced us to more staff and security. We made our way to the center of the gallery where our headdress was in a large glass. The headdress looked to be in perfect condition with tiny braids, shells, and split whale baleen. You could tell they took a lot of pride making it. We've never seen anything made with such detail. We were all so happy that we found our headdress after nearly 130 years. The headdress was displayed in the center of the gallery next to Sitting Bull's headdress. It was obvious that Ram had taken care of it and treated the headdress with care. I couldn't speak for George Ahul or Jimmy Ahul's experience during their exchange to the headdress, but the Ram staff treated us with respect during our visit.
So I'd like to ask for your thoughts on DNA use in repatriation cases. You provided hair samples to the Royal Ontario Museum to compare to the hair on the headdress. Was this something that the ROM asked for?
The curator took us to the lab where they do different types of testing on artifacts. They showed us some lab equipment and said that they can do DNA testing. They asked me if I would provide a hair sample and that they could provide us with a complementary test to compare my DNA to the DNA in the headdress. We were hesitant at first to do DNA testing. When it comes to genetic testing, it makes you wonder. We talked about it, asked more questions, and made sure that they would not use our DNA for any other purpose. We talked amongst ourselves with one of our advisors and we agreed to go ahead. It turned out that the DNA in the headdress was too contaminated with the DNA from people with European descent. They figured that the European DNA got onto the headdress from past handlers, like from curators or others who touched the headdress over the last 130 years. Although it might have been nice to see genetic connection from the test results, we already knew the headdress belonged to us. We knew from the written record that this was our great-grandfather's Ahul's headdress, and we knew from the family stories we heard that talked about how our great-grandfather was a very wealthy and a great Keowatichan. We knew he got his wealth through the Keo.
What role is the exploration place playing in the repatriation of your family headdress? Can you tell us a bit about how they became involved?
When we had the idea to bring the headdress back home, we didn't know where it could be displayed so that it was accessible. It wasn't until we talked with a few others that we learned about the Prince George Exploration Place and that it was a Class A museum. We talked to Tracy Caligaro's executive director there, and she was extremely supportive. So we drafted an MOU to formalize a partnership with the Exploration Place. We can't say enough about the help that we are receiving from the Exploration Place. They even offered to help us establish our own facility to house the headdress if we even decide to do that. If any Indigenous groups have any questions about our working relationship and need help to set up a partnership with a neighboring facility, we would be happy to do whatever we can.
Are there specific barriers that the Mayu Keo Society has encountered in relation to this case or other repatriations that you've been a part of? Or are there practices inside repatriation claims that you don't feel align with the practices in your community?
Museums like the ROM are big institutions. They follow process, bureaucracy, political correctness. Sometimes I think the process can get in the way of our Indigenous history and connections with our belongings.
Based on your experience, what are some things that you would like museums to take into consideration when they're approached about repatriation, or what initiative would you like to see them take? Basically, do you have any advice for museums?
I think the relationship was built with the Prince George Exploration Place was helpful when we talked to the ROM. We have a good plan with experienced people to help care for our headdress.
I'm really happy to hear that Exploration Place is acting as a support for this repatriation. I think other museums can really learn from this example that being a supportive role that doesn't take the lead, but lends its certain organizational aspects and accepting direction from Indigenous communities is so important. I just think it's a great example. When do you expect to have the headdress returned to the community?
In our meeting with the ROM and TEP, we are planning for the headdress to arrive in Prince George in September this year.
Do you expect to have ceremony to welcome it back? And will you find ways to adapt that should COVID still be a concern at that point?
It would be awesome to have a ceremony. We are thinking of inviting other Keowachan to watch the arrival of our headdress. We will find ways to have the ceremony one way or the other if COVID is still around. Once we have our own event, we want to open it up to everyone.
I'm so excited for your family to be reunited with the headdress closer to your home. And I can only imagine how incredible that must feel. I'm really appreciative of the time that you and your family have set out to chat with me. I think repatriation is so personal and so important, and I really thank you for being open to sharing your experiences with the BCMA and with our members.
Just a final word that we appreciate the support from the BC Museum Association, and we are looking forward to having the headdress on display here in the central interior for everyone to see. And I want to thank you, Leah, from my family for doing this for us.
It's my pleasure. Yeah, my pleasure. So just a reminder to our listeners that the BCMA has released additional repatriation and reconciliation resources on our website to support the conversation today, in addition to launching a national call for repatriation. We encourage everyone to participate in this discussion, both in your workplaces and at your community at large. You can find out more by visiting www.museum.bc.ca.